This is Fresh Air. It's easy to see how tragic the fighting is between the republics of the former country of Yugoslavia, but it's been very difficult for many of us to understand what the fighting is about. So we asked Yale professor Ivo Banets to help us put the conflict in historical perspective. Banets was born and raised in the city of Dubrovnik in Croatia, and he's the author of two books about Yugoslavia. The multi-ethnic state of Yugoslavia was put together after World War I. It was occupied and split up again during World War II, but was reassembled in 1945 under Marshal Tito, who ruled until 1980. Yugoslavia started breaking apart after the death of Tito. That was accelerated by the collapse of the Soviet Union. Bosnia-Herzegovina, Slovenia, and Croatia are now recognized internationally as independent states. Macedonia is seeking recognition. Serbia and Montenegro have joined together and call themselves the legal successor to Yugoslavia. Serbia has launched offensives into Croatia, Slovenia, and now Bosnia-Herzegovina. It's hard to sum up what the fighting is about, but we asked Professor Banets to try anyway.
What it's all about essentially is the struggle over the heritage of the moribund Yugoslav state. You have constituent republics, which have, in several cases, proclaimed their independence. And they are defending the territories that have evolved over a very long historical period, not during the post-war period, as is occasionally claimed. Now, the activist element in the whole story is Serbia. Serbia has a very specific problem. Namely, it has many co-nationals in the other republics that, from the point of view of the dominant ideology in Serbia, should be included within the Serbian state. Now, this does not, of course, operate in the same way in all of the former Yugoslav republics. There are hardly any Serbs in Slovenia, therefore the issue does not arise there. But there are Serb minorities in Croatia, in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and according to some theories coming from Belgrade, in Macedonia as well. And it has been the policy of the current Serbian government to try to wrest those territories in which these Serb minorities are well represented from the republics in which they find themselves and to attach them to Serbia.
Are Serbians who are living as minorities in republics outside of Serbia afraid that they will be oppressed?
This is precisely what they claim. And if there are, and there have been, historical incidents that would suggest that these relations could not be ultimately harmonized, this particular point of view can be defended, although I don't think that it can be a priori proven. What has happened in Croatia and in Bosnia-Herzegovina has been, I think, to a very large extent, an attempt to conciliate the interests of the minority Serbs in these republics. But apparently nothing is well enough for a political program that really cannot be satisfied except by inclusion in the Serbian state.
Bosnia-Herzegovina is half Muslim. And
almost half, yes.
Mm-hmm. And there is an Islamic government in the country.
Right. What emerged in Bosnia-Herzegovina after the elections in 1990 was a coalition government in which the three parties of the three constituent nationalities were equally represented. What has happened in the meantime is that the Serbian third of that coalition government essentially has withdrawn from it and is creating a separate political organization on the territory of Bosnia-Herzegovina. So the current government is, to a large extent, a Muslim and Croat coalition in which only those Serbs who do not agree with the program of the Serbian Democratic Party, the dominant party in Bosnia-Herzegovina, participate. And these, unfortunately, are not as many as one would wish.
What do the people of Bosnia-Herzegovina want?
Well, that depends to which national group they belong to. And therefore, a single aspiration cannot be really deduced at the moment. I would say that the aspirations of the Bosnian Muslims are to keep Bosnia-Herzegovina as a unitary and independent state. And this is something to which the Croats also subscribe. But I think that the majority of Serbs really do support the insurgency of the Serb Democratic Party, aided by the Yugoslav People's Army and would like to wrest the territories, which are predominantly Serb, away from Bosnia-Herzegovina and to unite it with Serbia. But this may not be possible since, after all, they represent only a third of the population of that republic. So far, they have had extensive success, mainly because the balance of forces is not evenly distributed. The Serb national group in Bosnia-Herzegovina is heavily armed, is supported by Serbia, is supported by the Yugoslav People's Army, and this is not, and this is an advantage that, of course, the other constituent groups in Bosnia-Herzegovina do not have.
Now, some people say that this war has been caused by Serbian aggression. Others say that the war has been caused by the repression of Serbs. Do you think it's one way or another?
I don't think that it can be said that the Serbs were repressed in Bosnia-Herzegovina. If anything, they had a decided advantage in that their demands were being met whenever they were possible. Of course, one can never agree to, from the point of view of Muslims and Croats, to the dismemberment and the abolition of independent Bosnia-Herzegovina. So the Serbs are not repressed in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and I don't think it can be claimed that they were repressed in Croatia either. The real active agent in the whole conflict is precisely the government of Slobodan Milosevic in Serbia, that has, to a very large extent, manipulated the aspirations of the Serb minorities in the two concerned republics. And I think that it can be claimed that whenever the government of Serbia decides to halt this operation, that in fact it would be halted. It has that influence over the events. The events are not as chaotic as the spokesmen of the Serb minority in Bosnia-Herzegovina have claimed.
Tell us something about the background of the Serbian president, Slobodan Milosevic.
Very interesting individual who comes from a relatively obscure background, meaning that his position in the Titoist hierarchy was not particularly prominent. He comes from a ecclesiastical family. His father was a Serbian Orthodox priest. His mother, however, was a communist and a school teacher. What is particularly interesting in his family background is that both of his parents committed suicide. This is suggested in some quarters that he too, in a certain sense, is conducting a suicidal policy.
My guest is Yale professor Ivo Bonitz. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the fighting in the Yugoslavian republics with Yale professor Ivo Bonitz. What does the word Yugoslavia mean now? What is Yugoslavia now?
Well, there are two points of view on this. One point of view is that Yugoslavia is the state that existed till its constituent republics moved away from it and therefore no longer exists. This is the point of view in Slovenia, in Croatia, in all the other successor states that have proclaimed independence. From the point of view of Serbia, what has happened is that Yugoslavia was left by any number of its republics, and therefore Yugoslavia is what remains. It is the remainder. It is the rump of the old Yugoslav state. And this is precisely what the government of Slobodan Milosevic had in mind when, at the end of April, it proclaimed the establishment of the new Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, consisting of Serbia and Montenegro, but very suggestively stated that this particular new federation is open to any new members that wish to join it. I think what this essentially meant was an invitation to the Serb groups in Croatia and in Bosnia-Herzegovina to continue carving out territories of these republics and to join them to this new Yugoslav state. The international community does not recognize that this new Yugoslavia is, in fact, a linear successor of the old Titoist Yugoslavia. In fact, the recognitions to Milosevic's Federal Republic of Yugoslavia have not come, with exceptions. And although this issue has not been resolved in the United Nations, where the so-called Yugoslav delegation still sits, I think that ultimately it will have to be resolved because this is not just a political issue, it's also an issue of It's a legal issue, and it's an issue of a disposition of certain state property. For example, who is going to own any number of different buildings, embassies, and so on, that the old Yugoslav state had abroad, moreover in vast quantities.
I'd like your opinion on the UN sanctions against Serbia, and the UN identified Serbia as the principal aggressor in this war.
I think that this was the least that could have been done under the circumstances. It's very likely, and in fact I'm certain, that this came far too late. It's not clear whether the sanctions by themselves are going to change or influence Serbia's course, which would suggest to me that it's quite likely that at some point either the United Nations or the wider international community will have to consider military intervention. That does not necessarily mean a full-scale invasion, but that could mean engagement in various other ways. For example, blockade of the harbors of Montenegro, part of the Serb-Montenegrin state, or the jamming of air communications, which would deprive the Yugoslav People's Army its advantage in air warfare, and so on and so on.
You know, many people have said, well, since there's no oil in the Yugoslavian republics, the United States doesn't feel it has the same involvement as it did, say, when Iraq invaded Kuwait. What are, though, the international possible repercussions of this fighting in Yugoslavia?
Well, there are many. First of all, they have exposed the disunity of the Western countries over issues that are entirely too close to home. And this in itself, I think, is a negative effect. Many differences within Europe, at the time when Europe was thinking of integration, were exposed precisely in the context of the Yugoslav events. But more importantly, I think that it is a very bad precedent, especially in Europe, and especially at the time when there are vast changes in the former communist world, to stand by and permit one particular leadership that is quite out of control to gain advantage through what is essentially aggression. Therefore, if the New World Order is to be more than a pretty phrase, I think that there is a great interest on the part of the international community to bring this to a very quick end. But let me go beyond that. The Yugoslav developments, I think, have a great possibility of spilling over the southern borders of former Yugoslavia. The issue of Kosovo, which I think is a ticking bomb within Serbia, is very likely to involve Albania at some perhaps not too distant a point. Greece and its peculiar attitude toward the recognition of the Republic of Macedonia is, I think, also a very likely spot that might have a spillover effect, since other countries in the neighborhood, specifically Bulgaria and Turkey, are also interested in this issue. Greece and Turkey, as you know, are NATO members, and their relations have never been very well ordered. I think that further contention between them over the Balkan issues is likely to have devastating effect in the NATO alliance. So you can see, I think, that there are many linkages here that all suggest that something has to be done very quickly to bring this fighting to the end before the already catastrophic course becomes even more catastrophic.
You're going to Croatia on Sunday. You grew up there. How has your family been affected by the war?
Many of them have been obliged to leave Dubrovnik. Many of them have spent months in temporary shelters. My wife's family, for example, was exposed to a naval bombardment on an island where they reside only 10 days ago. So quite obviously, I have many friends and family members who have been very much affected by all of these developments, and one necessarily has to express tremendous sympathy for them and, whenever possible, to offer them comfort.
Is your family shocked by the fighting, or is it something that they always expected could happen?
I don't think that anybody expected the situation that we have now. I think that in extraordinary circumstances, certain demons are released, and they always surprise relatively peace-loving people to encounter massacres that, for example, have been committed quite casually in Bosnia-Herzegovina during the past couple of months, is beyond the wildest imagination of anybody who has watched the building of the current conflicts. So there is a surreal aspect to these developments, and one feels as a result profoundly uncomfortable and somehow out of balance faced with such developments.
Are you referring to the fighting in Sarajevo?
I'm referring to the fighting in Sarajevo, but I'm also referring to any number of other scenes of combat that are less familiar. Sarajevo, Dubrovnik, Vukovar, and so on have a certain recognition value at the moment, but there are many, many obscure places where equally horrid things have happened, and which unfortunately did not have the advantage of presence of journalists and television cameramen in order to show to the world the nature of this particular conflict.
Ivo Banec is a professor of history at Yale University and the author of the books The National Question in Yugoslavia and With Stalin Against Tito. This is Fresh Air.